From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour. The 11th Annual Confirmation Conference will take place Sunday, November 17th, 9:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. In Red Bluff at the State Theater in Red Bluff, 333 Oak Street in Red Bluff. Joe Melendrez will be there. Jackie Francois will be there. Mike Patton will be there. Should be a great, great program. Give Lindsay West a call. Lindsay's at 916-733-0151, or you can email her lwest@scd.org. Well, we go partway across the country now to the great city of Houston, Texas. We're joined by the head coach of 40 Days for Life, Sean Carney. Sean, good day.
How are you doing? Good to be on again.
Yeah, I had to use head coach. I got to get some football in there right off the bat.
Football and Game 7 of the World Series tonight. The Astros are in.
Oh, my goodness gracious. It's another sure sign, Sean, that I think the end is near. I mean, the Nationals win the first two in Houston, where Houston's, you know, can't be beat, and then Houston goes to Washington and wins three, and now they're back in Houston. And in that six straight games where whatever happened to home field advantage?
Yeah, I know the parents in Houston are ready for it to be over because it's messing up everybody's schedule. You tell your kids they can't stay up every night, and then you end up letting them stay up a little longer than they should to watch the games, and they're tired the next day.
So you watch. Tonight it'll go 19 innings. You know.
Oh my word! Well, at least we know it will end the night. That is the thing about Game Seven. If it doesn't, then
that's right.
The relativists have surely taken over, and there is no true end to anything.
Yeah, they should go to after if it's tied after nine innings, they should do like football does. They should just go to sudden death, one pitch. If it's a ball, you lose. If it's a strike, you win.
Exactly.
And then all the kids can get to bed.
What'd you say?
Then all the kids can get to bed.
Exactly. I know. And, of course, this during the fall when we have a 40 Days for Life campaign, much less the largest campaign we've ever had, thankfully, we're in 505 cities this fall. And, I'm just a little busy this fall. The Astros are going on this World Series run, which they should. They're the best team in baseball. But it's messing up my schedule for sure.
Is Houston kind of crazy for the World Series?
It is. It's a great atmosphere. My parish is across the street from the stadium.
Oh, wow.
So it's great for the parish, and it's an exciting time. And, you know, of course, everybody's, you know, rooting for the Astros.
Sure.
And be great for the city. They won it in 2017, right after Hurricane Harvey hit.
Right, I remember.
And so it was. The Astros have been good to the city of Houston for sure.
A great, great unifying thing. So did you pick that parish because of its location near the stadium?
No. It's a beautiful parish. Many people have been there. If they travel to Houston, they stay downtown to the
Right. Aviation.
And the oldest church of any kind, actually, in Houston.
What's the name of the parish?
Annunciation.
Oh, wow. Very good.
Appropriately, a very pro-life parish, as you could imagine.
I can imagine.
A name like that.
Yes, I can imagine the first joyful mystery.
Exactly. So yeah, it is. It's fun to see people, you know, come over and go to mass before the game or after the game.
Yeah.
And come over and look at the church. The church is beautiful. So there's always, particularly game days on a Sunday, there'll be, you know, half the crowd are just visitors, so they'll catch mass and then go to the game, and they all stand up and start taking pictures of the sanctuary. It's quite a scene.
The nice thing about the World Series, if it does go to it's obviously a seventh game, but any World Series, if it goes to seven games and you have the two breaks within, it's perfect for a novena.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we need it. We definitely need it. Oh, is that the truth?
And, of course, I have to tell you, of course, we have Bishop Soto here in the Diocese of Sacramento, and who's the big new young star who just had his 21st birthday of the Nationals, but Soto.
Soto, and everybody, the media is just fawning over him.
Yes.
I think they've said his age about 100 times.
Yes, so, yes, indeed.
But yeah, he is good. He's very good, and he's killing us.
Yeah, including last night. Well, you're heading into the final week of 40 Days for Life, the fall campaign. Is there a wind down, or is this the grand finale? Is it the seventh game? What happens in it? Yeah.
Well, the way our year is structured, really, this is sort of the revving up for us. Our busiest times are right before the campaign and right after the campaign.
Mm-hmm.
The campaign gives us a lot of consistency, and we usually know what we're dealing with. Things are popping up, legal issues, harassment, and then certainly the good stuff, the workers leaving, the abortion facilities closing, the stories of the babies saved. So the campaign, we at least know what to expect and are, all hands on deck. But as we close out the campaign, it's particularly difficult for us as an organization because we open up applications for the spring on December 1st. So it's a very quick turnaround. We try to end the campaign, raise a little money, have Thanksgiving, and open up applications.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a whirlwind and one that our wonderful team has gotten used to over the years, and it's been great. We fortunately have a little bit later Ash Wednesday.
Right.
It's in late February, so we have a little buffer, but it's we'll hit the ground running once the campaign ends for sure.
You don't even get December 1. You don't even get a day off after Thanksgiving. It being so late this year.
It is. Thanksgiving's very late this year.
Yeah.
We all noticed that. And then my wife and I are welcoming our eighth baby in December. And so we are ready. We're ready for the home stretch of 2019 for sure.
I'll bet. But so how does, for people that are listening and say, application process, I'd like to start one in my town. What does that involve?
That's a great question. You have to fill out the application. You have to let us know, where you are, why you want to lead, and we take the applications, and then most people are approved within 24 hours,
mm-hmm.
Or we may have a few follow-up questions, but everybody who's ever led a 40 Days for Life campaign has had to apply. It's one of the reasons, we've never had an incident.
Mm-hmm.
Because we know our people really well and our local leaders, and they know us really well. And then once you are approved, you can start going through the training immediately online, and we take you from A to Z on how to lead a 40 Days for Life campaign, and it's really beautiful. I mean, we have, obviously we have new leaders in new cities at every campaign, and we also get new leaders in cities, that have had 40 Days for Life for a while, because
mm-hmm.
our leader will take a break. And so it's great to see people come in, and say, I've never done a media interview. I've never recruited a volunteer at my church. I have no idea what I'm doing, but I feel God is calling me to do this. And I'm telling you, within a month, they're just tearing it up. They're doing great things. And we've had so many abortion facilities close, and the local leader will call us and say, I never thought my abortion facility would close.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So give us an example of somebody who was maybe new for the fall campaign.
Oh, goodness. We had a lot of stay-at-home moms with young kids. We had one new leader. She's never led a campaign before, and took over for a veteran campaign leader, and just small kids, Catholic, and a little nervous, and
mm-hmm.
She did great in that case, but there are so many around the country, but also the world. We have a Franciscan priest who leads a campaign in England and does a great job, has permission to lead the campaign every year, and nobody can say, you know, nobody can say no to Father. And so it's very difficult. And he himself is a went through an abortion with his girlfriend years ago before he found his vocation. And it's a beautiful story. We're highlighting him in the winter version of our magazine, our Day 41 magazine. If people get that, if you don't get it, you can get it on our website. It's free, but we have a beautiful story on Father doing that. And so, you know, you just never know. We have priests, we have pastors, we have young moms, we have retired colonels, we have airline pilots, we have everyone who you could imagine has led a campaign.
Wow, that's fairly impressive. What sorts of new cities did you get this time? Lots of small cities or primarily big cities or what?
Suburbs, I would say, was sort of our theme. If we had to say we had a theme of new cities, it would be the suburbs. And part of that is, you know, we follow the abortion industry because they are thankfully consolidating. It's not what they want to do. Planned Parenthood wants to be in every smaller community, midtown, you know, mid-sized community. And they're unable to do that because of the market, because of the hearts and minds that are changed, because their reputation is horrible right now, because there's a shortage of abortion doctors, and because these pregnancy resource centers that now outnumber abortion providers 5-to-1 are killing them, no pun intended. And so they are consolidating and building these mega super Walmart Planned Parenthood abortion facilities, and that's been a trend the last 15 years. They don't want to do that, but they've sort of been forced to do that. So what happens is they open up these satellite facilities, Planned Parenthood particularly, they're in the suburbs that they can then refer to the big mega centers. And so they do this in St. Paul, Minnesota. They do it in Houston, where I live. They do it in St. Louis. And so, you know, they'll have smaller offices. And when we can get a 40 Days for Life campaign outside those chemical abortion offices or the abortion referral offices, that is really, really impactful because they don't expect that they'll get opposition.
Oh, that's very good. So what keeps you up at night besides those kids? What keeps you what keeps you up at night? You know, what do you worry about? What are your where are your brick walls, if you will?
Well, whether it's good or a hindrance, I'm a very deep sleeper, and so it's hard to. Once I go to bed, I'm in bed. I don't really have sleepless nights. But as far as what concerns me, I think is what concerns everybody, every Catholic Christian in America, which is all of a sudden within the last year, it has been somehow a legitimate political position. Call it whatever you want, moral position, political position, to say that if a baby girl survives an abortion, we can leave her on the table to die. And, you know, we don't have the fringe lunatics out in the street who scream about abortion rights yelling this stuff. We have governors and politicians and people who sound nice and dress well and are supposedly well-educated calmly saying, you know, of course we need infanticide and we should have abortion all through, you know, use what Roe v. Wade allows and do abortions all through 40 weeks. And it's absolute insanity. Nobody who was pro-choice was talking about this a year or two ago.
No, it's
and now,
you know, and, you know,
a wave of infanticide.
We don't do politics here. You know, we do Catholic teaching, but I've seen the denials and I've seen the tape, the one famous tape of a governor. And I mean, he was on a radio interview and he just straight out said it. I mean, there were just no denying it. He said it.
Yes. No, we made it the intro of our podcast because that's what I'm saying is my concern. It's not necessarily the content, which is barbaric enough and completely outrageous. It's the tone in which they're saying, and that is the concern of the church and all Catholics and all Christians people of goodwill is our culture. You know, Walker Piercy famously said, when you dehumanize the human being, you can kill without passion.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We don't even see passion from these people anymore. They're not angry, visibly anyways. They're not angry. They're unhappy. They are just sterile and cold. And that's the mentality required in order to justify abortion. But
yeah,
for us, we should be concerned about that.
Similar to some of those tapes from, the underground tapes where the one doctor is talking about harvesting the body parts, you know, just very calmly over her salad, you know. And right. It used to be when somebody was advocating something just outrageous, you could just tell they were off their rocker and nobody was listening
exactly.
to them. But you're right. In this cold, dispassionate way, it's like, yeah, I'm just eating my salad here. And, you know, it's like, holy cow.
Yes. You're sort of looking around saying, did anybody else hear that? And I think that is, you know, part of that is, as I mentioned, that we see the abortion industry for who they are, which they dehumanize an entire segment of the population. So if you're unborn, who cares if you're 40 weeks or 6 weeks? You know, that's how they look at the dignity of the human person, is that it has no dignity until, I don't know when now, because if we can allow, you know, a baby to suffocate to death on a table, then we'll, you know, we are supporting infanticide. But we're seeing that the true colors of what's required for abortion. This is Machiavelli. Might makes right. They're smaller. They don't have our rights. They don't have our freedom, and they can't defend themselves. And so we can kill them. And, you know, when you see that played out in a language, that is what should concern us and cause us to take action.
Yeah, and for those that don't know what we're talking about here, there was a radio interview with a governor who shall remain nameless, and talking about, well, suppose that a baby is born despite the attempts to abort the baby, and he said, well, we would make the baby comfortable, you know, like wrap him in a blanket, put him over on the side, or probably feed the baby, and then we'd have a serious discussion about, you know, what to do. You know, it's like, holy cow, why would you need to make something that's not even alive comfortable?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what we're supposed to say to that. I mean, I guess that's very nice of him, compassionate of him to have the baby comfortable before he and the parents decide if he or she is going to live.
Yeah.
But this is the insanity that we're seeing and that we haven't seen, right? I mean, for now nearly 47 years, we've had Roe v. Wade. That did change what it meant to be an American. And now we are saying that we are taking advantage of what Roe v. Wade allows, and state after state are trying to implement abortions at 40 weeks and not require medical attention to a baby who survives an abortion. So now we want infanticide. And it should serve as a wake-up call to anyone of conscience and, you know, to take action and oppose this. But this is, I think, I mean, even I'm surprised. I've heard everything from the abortion industry, I thought, until this year. And this is absolutely insanity. And it doesn't deserve our respect. This is not a position. You know, everybody's opinion is different. This is absolute insanity, and it's barbaric, as all abortions are. But this highlights what we have allowed to nest in our culture.
Yeah, and you know, it's just mind-boggling to think. But it's sort of the logical extension. Once we kicked that door open back in the late 60s, prior to Roe v. Wade, here in California we did it, New York State did it, and everybody said, oh, no, and if you had said then that this is what it would lead to, nobody would have believed you. But you can see it. You knock that door open a crack, and then somebody kicks it open a little bit further, and it becomes a human right to the point where you're some kind of a Neanderthal if you're against that. And yet here, even in California, if a woman is pregnant and is assaulted by someone other than a doctor, and the baby dies as a result of that, it's a homicide. And you go, wait a minute. How, Scott Peterson, one of the, you know, sort of the famous poster child for that, he killed his wife who was 8 months pregnant. The child died and the wife died, charged with a double homicide. Now, he wasn't charged with first degree for the death of the baby because that was, quote unquote, incidental to the death of his wife, which was intentional and premeditated and all that. So that was a first degree charge. But the even though the other was second degree, it was still homicide. You took the life of a human being. He was convicted of a double homicide. And yet the same state is saying a doctor could do that. And it's not only no homicide, it's something you could speak at a rally about.
Yeah, I mean, we've had women charged because they got on a roller coaster.
Exactly.
Their unborn child died, you know, and so...
Were powerful drugs, things like that. Yeah.
I do think this is, as horrible and as barbaric as all this is, this, and the listeners sitting there going, I can't even believe we're talking about this. This is insane. What's going on in the world? But all of this is a good sign. Because what we're pointing out is that you have to be schizophrenic in order to have abortion in a just and free society. We can't prosecute Scott Peterson for killing his unborn child and also allow people just to walk in and do it.
Right.
And so the schizophrenia, we don't gain value. We don't gain dignity during gestation. We simply grow. And so the whole notion that, you know, at 40 weeks this is really ugly and nasty, but at 8 weeks it's sort of respectable is a joke. It's so inconsistent. So you have to be schizophrenic in order to live this double life in our culture right now. And I think that's good. That's a sign that abortion is ending. You know, we're getting fed up with it, both sides. And they're digging in. And they don't want to talk about abortion. They certainly don't want to talk about ultrasounds or what happens or any of this. They live in the world of vague rhetoric, and they have to, despite 47 years of legalization. So all of these are really good signs, the best sign being the hearts and minds. You know, the conversion gate is only swinging in one direction the last 5 decades on this issue, from the women who have had abortions, the men who have paid for them, certainly the doctors that have done them, and those who work in the abortion industry like Abby Johnson. It only swings in one direction, the conversion gate. There's nobody hosting Catholic radio right now who's going to wake up in 5 years and have kids and grandkids and say, you know what, I should have been running an abortion facility
right.
my whole life and,
right.
and have a conversion. So it's really a good sign.
Well, the one sign for me has always been, as my kids have grown up and as, you know, other kids, they're for the first 10 or 12 or 15 years of life, when you finally decide they're old enough, you know, maybe they're coming to the pro-life banquet with you or whatever, and they say, Dad, what, Mom, what is an abortion actually? You know, sometimes they're 6, sometimes they're 8, sometimes they're 10. And when you try to explain it to them, they're appalled. It doesn't matter. 100% of children cannot believe a parent would do that, you know. And it's only when they get older and, you know, they get who knows what, you know, they kind of fall away or get influenced by something else that they go, well, yeah, I guess I'm pro-choice, because they're afraid not to be. And, you know, I've always said, Sean, if you could take a baby before it was born and make it, you know, 100% conscious, like adult conscious, and say, okay, we want you to pick 2 people in the entire world that you would trust while you're in utero. Who would you pick? For sure that baby would pick its mom, and it would pick a baby doctor. And those are the only 2 people that would make that baby's life in danger.
It's true, and that you know, that's the famous Mother Teresa quote, that if we can't tell a mother not to kill her own child, how can we tell anybody not to kill anyone?
Yeah.
And that is the root of I think how sad this makes our Lord and our Lady, because he came into the world through the womb, he came to a holy family, and now this divorce of pinning a mother against her child is horrible. I mean, we abort 56 million of our own children around the world every single year. It sounds made up if you were to get in a time machine from even 25 or 50 years ago. And we're doing it to ourselves. And I think that's the true work of the devil, is that he hates the family. He's attacking the family. He certainly is attacking the fruit of marriage, which are our unborn children. And when you can do that, you can attack the institution that produces that fruit. We certainly see that as well. So, you know, I think that the big picture restoration, and we are seeing this, is the family. It is the family. That's how we rebuild. We didn't get here overnight. We're not getting out of it overnight. But that is the solution, is children knowing that they are loved, that they are cared for, and keeping that position, which many of them do, that abortion is horrible and it's evil, and who would ever do that? And you know, a lot of people have that view, and a lot of people have that view who have an abortion. You know, nobody grows up wanting one, and so natural law is on our side, and I think we're seeing that come to fruition in our country for sure.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. Nobody wants them. Nobody wants to be in that position. And you know, I've talked to Marie Leatherby a number of times at Sacramento Life Center and various other people who run so-called crisis pregnancy centers, but we've sort of gotten away from that term, but life centers. And it's very interesting. I say, well, so there are people that have come to you and who are undecided, and through your help and guidance, they decided to go to term. I say, have any of them ever come back with the baby in arms and say,
Right. This
kid has ruined my life. Here, you take it. Has that ever happened to you? And they say, no, it's never happened. In fact, it's almost comical to think about, because once that baby's born, and that's the real split personality here in our country, you've got 7 kids and an 8th on the way. I've got 6. When you put that baby in a stroller and walk through the grocery store, everybody comes up and coos and oohs and ahs and wants to know how old it is and what its name is and on and on and on. The whole world loves babies.
It's so true.
You don't see people sneering at you or saying, get that baby out of here. Or, you know, it's everybody loves a baby.
Everybody loves a baby, and this is the beauty of Christ and the church, is even if the mom says, you know what, I hate my kid, he's 1 year old, I wish I would have aborted him, here he is, I don't want him. It is only, it doesn't matter what you're doing. It doesn't matter if you you claim to be a homosexual, if you are part of a certain race. The Catholic Church universally stands up for all human dignity, that you are not your sins, that you are not your mere desires. And even if the mother said, I do regret it and I wish I would have aborted him, the church says that child still has dignity.
Right.
It doesn't, you know, we can't remove the dignity away from another person. If a group of people are persecuted, we still defend them as human beings with dignity made in the image and likeness of God. And I think that is what we have gotten so far away from. And one of the reasons, honestly, I think 40 Days for Life has had such an impact, because the vigil just points out the basic, that no one wants to be here, the workers or the women going in for an abortion, and that this is wrong. That, you know, if you're standing outside of of a restaurant because you don't like the fact that they serve meat and you're a vegetarian. Some people agree with you and some don't, but there's no deep internal stirring of emotion.
Right.
But this speaks to our core. Everyone knows what an abortion is and who's involved with it. And it really goes a long way when we publicly oppose it.
Indeed. Indeed. Well, Sean, as you look forward to spring, that starts Ash Wednesday. Like you say, you have a little more time this year. any thoughts? Any new initiatives you're rolling out?
Yeah, we'll have a couple of new initiatives. I'm releasing another book for Lent, and so it'll be out a couple of weeks before Lent. It's called To the Heart of the Matter, and it's on what we're actually talking about, which is restoring the family and doing the little things in our daily lives for God to build a culture of life. And so that will be out on February the 4th, and just a few weeks before Ash Wednesday. We're also going to be releasing a new training next year to help some of our local leaders who want it to have year-round vigils. So we got a lot of good stuff coming out. We will dedicate our beautiful memorial to the unborn on February 1st that is built at our building. It's absolutely beautiful, and it'll represent all the children who we don't save at 40 Days for Life vigils around the world. And so that will be, the construction will be finished in a couple of weeks, and then we'll dedicate it on February the 1st. So a lot going on, and like I mentioned, you know, for us, it's we hit the ground running as applications to lead a 40 Days for Life open on December 1st.
Very, very good. Well, Sean, always a pleasure to talk with you, and prayers for the birth of your child in December. Prayers for you and your family and your wife, and thanks for all you do, and we'll look forward to our paths crossing again soon.
Okay, I look forward to it. God bless you.
Hey,
keep up the great work.
God bless you, too. Take care. That's Sean Carney, the director of 40 Days for Life. All Souls Day is Saturday, and you're invited to honor the faithfully departed with a Mass at 10 a.m. celebrated by Father Brendan McKeefrey at Calvary Cemetery and Funeral Center, 7101 Verner Avenue in Citrus Heights. There will be confession at 9 a.m. and 11 a.m., a prayer walk at 11:30 a.m., and for any questions, call Catholic Funeral and Cemetery Services at 916-726-1232. Also, Saturday, November 2nd, as we honor the faithfully departed with a bilingual Mass at 3 p.m., celebrated by Father Andres Emanuele at St. Mary's Altar at St. Mary's Cemetery and Funeral Center, 6509 Fruit Ridge Road here in Sacramento. Bring a framed picture of your loved one to be placed on the altar. And if you can't make the event, share a picture of your loved one on the Facebook page at fb.com/smfccfcs Sacramento. And again, the phone number there for any questions, 916-452-4831. We'll take a break here. We'll be back with more on a Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
Good morning. This is Sister Maria, and I'm the Formation Director for the Seminarians, and you are listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
That's me. Welcome back, and we're pleased to welcome Father Memo, the Director of Vocations.
Oh, good morning, everyone. Thank you, Bob, for having me here.
Absolutely. Well, we have... Is it National Vocations Week or International Vocations Week?
No, it's only national. I think every conference of bishops does their own. And at least for United States, this is the one. The next week. The
November whole, 3rd to 9th.
Correct.
Right.
So that's why we are here. I'm here, you know, and I really appreciate that you allow me to be here this day in order to remind all the people, all those who are listening to us to pray for vocations, right, and to do something, a little bit something that week, as a little sacrifice, as a little offering to promote, I mean, for the awareness of vocations.
Right.
And that something can be a prayer, that something can be a little fasting, that mm-hmm. something can be maybe approaching a young man, a young woman, saying, hey, you know, I see that you are pious, a pious person, that you like God. Have you ever considered being a priest? Mm-hmm. Have you ever considered being a religious sister? You know, the statistics say that for a man, a young man and a young woman to really consider the religious vocation or the priestly vocation has had already, at least three people approaching and telling them, hey, have you ever considered being a priest? So at least three people. So if you are listening to me today, maybe you are one of those three people that can approach the young men, young women that you know, young men, young women that are around you, and just ask this question. They might tell you immediately, oh, no, that's crazy, which was my answer all the whole time, my whole childhood and growing up. But little by little, through many people that approached me, I was able to be open to really consider this and ask God about it.
Yeah, I think it would be. I think back to my childhood, and nobody asked me that question. If they had, I think at the very least I'd have been honored.
Yeah.
That they would consider that I might be somebody who could be a priest.
Yeah.
You know, it would make me stop and think about it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Nowadays, you know, unfortunately, we adults are so focused on our children for them to be successful in the way understand success, which is having money, having trips, having pleasure, having a happy life. And we think that by providing everything material or intellectual to them, we will provide happiness. But that's not true. That's not the case. We see very successful people in the businesses, in the movie makers, in many areas, and still they are empty, still they are unhappy. They have money, they have pleasure, they have everything they want, and they can achieve with their talents, but still they are unhappy because they have not found the meaning of their lives. So we're talking about meaning. We're talking about giving a purpose to life, and that purpose is given by God. When we are in the right vocation, in the right track of our life, we're not talking about profession. We're not talking about an activity.
Right.
We're talking about being,
mm-hmm.
being. And many times adults approach young people about their activity, about their profession, about their doing. But we are not human doings. We are human beings.
Right.
We are about being, not about doing. That's what constitutes who we are as human beings, as persons. So that's why this national Vocation Awareness Week, that's a very good opportunity for parishes and for families to talk about vocations. Actually, I have given to your pastors, if you are listening to me, yes, approach your pastor, because I have given them in the convocation that happened a few weeks ago a very beautiful folder with different material and resources for the pastors, the catechists, and families may have. Pastors just have to photocopy them or order more, because all this material, all this this package that I gave them is coming from Vianney Vocations. Mm-hmm. And even if you are listening to me, you can go to Vianney Vocations, www.vianneyvocations.com, and you will find a lot of material. If you don't know what kind of prayer to do with your family, with your children, there are prayers for children. There is material for children, even when they are in kindergarten, for them to start doing little drawings and little activities. For them to, you know, to ask, to be open to Jesus, to God, and ask, hey, is Jesus calling me? What is my place in the church? What is my place in this big family of faith? So all those kind of questions are important to address to our children. But then I want to tell you something that can be very positive. Based on a survey that GATA did recently, they found out that those men and women who joined the religious congregations and the priesthood from 2000 onwards, they share as a common pattern in their lives, in their homes. My point is that vocations start at home. Vocations don't start when we are old and we try to decide what to do with our life, but vocations start at home. And they say that they were open to listen to the voice of God when they receive affection from their parents. Mm-hmm. Yes, you know, hugging your children, kissing them, telling them, I love you, you are beautiful, you are strong, you are important to me. That's the first step, because many times we are blocked. We block our relationship with God because we compare God with what we have at hand, which is the image of our parents. And many times our parents are people that we don't really trust very much, because they abandon us, they mistreat us, they don't respect us. But when you as parents, you respect your children, you love them, and you form them, and you tell them that you love them, but you are forming them, they will grow with that idea of God as well. So hugging your children, the first step to promote vocations at home. Second, you know, we like movies and we like TV programs. Choose good TV programs. Choose good movies. Movies that speak about God, about the life of the saints. You know, there are resources online about movies. For instance, form.org. You can go to form.org. You pay a little bit, of course, but you can have access to different movies. Also, as your pastor can give you access for free if he pays for that program in the parish. Third thing that they share in common, that parents also were careful of choosing the media, the mass media, you know, how children use the cell phones, tablets, books. Not every book, not every movie, once again, not every thing that we watch is good, because many times the things that we watch are full of violence and sex and pleasure and that. Just check what your children are playing on the video games.
Right.
Most of the video games are based on war and destroying other people and destroying monsters. So they are like that. They have violence in their head. So check that out. Then the fourth, encourage your children. You know, since they are little children, there are families that, for instance, now it's Halloween. Mm-hmm. Well, hello. So Halloween is about monsters. And we are honoring the monsters and the darkness in the world. Why don't we dress our children as saints, you know, as holy people, as angels? I know that sounds like a weird, and you are afraid that the children be rejected and other people, all the children mock at your own children, but why not? I mean, being Christian is to go counter current in the world since the beginning. So, you know, playing with your children.
It would be great to see your kids go off trick-or-treating with somebody. Somebody says, what's that costume? You say, well, that's, Saint Teresa.
Saint Teresa.
That's Mother Teresa. That's, you know, you just go on and on and on.
Yeah, addressing like a Carmelite sister or a Franciscan brother. Oh, yeah, that's going to be really something. I promise you, people will notice your child.
All right, you go. You come to our house dressed as a priest, you get extra candy.
Hey, exactly. Okay? I was about to say that. I promise you, even people will give you extra candy. So then another thing is praying. Another important thing is praying. And with this, not only praying with your children, but something very important is having meals together. You know, it's easy to, when I'm preaching in the homilies, hey guys, because I give tasks every Sunday, I give tasks through the week to the people that attend the masses that I preach in. And I say, you know, that your task is going to be praying. That's easy. But when I tell them, you parents, your task for this week will be to have meal with your children, I see their faces like, oh, no, that's too hard.
Yeah.
It's hard because we are used to that everyone has their own meal in their own time, in their own room. But having meals together, that's not very common. That happens sometimes on Sundays. But anyway, on Sundays, we share the meal with our cell phones or with our, you know, parents. With our extended family.
Right.
Not with our family, which is mother, father, and children. So sharing meals with children and praying over the meal, that's very powerful. And last thing is talk directly to your children about vocations. Mm-hmm. Ask them, hey, my son, hey, my daughter, what do you want to be when you grow up? Maybe you can be a priest. Maybe you can be a religious sister. You know, God wants you to be happy. And I end this. When your child approaches you and says, you know, mom, you know, dad, I would like to be a priest. I would like to be a religious sister. Don't go to both extremes that I have seen that happens. One is that the father or the mother freaks out. Oh, my God, no. Don't freak out, nor push too much. There are other parents that go like, oh, yes, of course, tomorrow I will call the pastor.
Right.
Maybe your child is only 8 years old and you are calling the pastor to, you know, to make your child sign up something. And don't push your child.
Right.
The right answer is, good, let us ask Jesus what he says about it.
Mm-hmm.
Let us ask God, because whatever God wants for you, I want for you too.
Oh, that's
the best thing. Whatever God wants for you, I want for you too. And that will encourage your children to be open to whatever vocation, you know, whatever thing, as long as God wants it, because we know that what God wants of our lives is the best for us.
Yeah, you know, a few years ago, I had just the opportunity and fortunate opportunity to interview one-on-one with the Cardinal Dolan from New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about vocations and his vocation. And he said, mine came from the family.
Mm.
And he said, it is so important that your parents, like, as you just said, are open to it. Not that they're pushing you or, but that they're open to it, that they're encouraging it, that, you know, not saying, oh, I thought you were going to go to Harvard, or I thought you were going to be a lawyer, or I mm-hmm. thought you were going to be a doctor. Just to be open to it and encouraging to it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just so important. And boy, you hit it on the head with the, as our kids have gotten, or we have four teenagers in the house now, the notion of eating dinner together becomes a lot more difficult because they all have activities that you're, you know, one daughter's in choir and another one's in baseball and another, and you encourage those things. You want them to do those things. And, well, baseball practice 5 to 7 and choir practice at 7:30 because they can't get the room and because somebody else is using the room. And we don't have a water polo player, but at the high school where they go, water polo practice is at 9 o'clock at night.
And I'm going,
oh my goodness, because of the use of the pool. You know, and you go, I looked at my wife and I said, we're not going to have a water polo player.
That's too much.
And it's just those kinds of demands where when they set these schedules, they don't think about the family and what that does. And, you know, it's great that they have activities, but boy, that pulling them all together for dinner, I mean, we do it as often as we can, but I know this, the what families are facing. And sometimes families we're very fortunate that they all get along, but, you know, Junior wants to eat in his bedroom and she wants to eat in her bedroom because they they're going to argue otherwise.
Yeah.
And the parents say, okay, just do it. You know.
Yes.
And so it's hard, but yes. You have to make a concerted, because once you yes. do it, the fruits of that are just yeah. remarkable. Just sitting around yeah. and saying, how was your day? Yeah. And what, you know, what's stressing you out? What joy did you have yeah. today? Really, really is a positive thing.
Because in the end, once again, as I said before, what makes a parent happy is to see your children happy.
Yeah.
And the same, filling up the schedule of your children with sports and activities, that not always make them happy. On the contrary, they are stressed.
Yeah.
There is a growing stress in our children and young people with anxiety and depression, because there are so many things that they are doing that they don't have time to, you know, to relax,
right?
To think, to ponder about life, because they are just doing things,
yep.
And they are not used to be in silence. They are not used to be alone. And when they get to be alone for some reason, they just fall in depression because yeah. they feel that they are not achieving things.
Yeah.
So it's stressing. It's very stressing. So it's good that you said. It's good that your children are in activities, because that will make them grow physically, mentally. You're right. But also another area of your children and your own life is the spiritual one, the moral one,
right.
The family concept of family. Yeah, that's a very important thing. So that's why I gave a pamphlet to your pastor that is called 7 Ways Families Can Foster Vocations. And once again, this is made by V&A Vocations. Mm-hmm. It's a little pamphlet that you can get from your pastor. And just approach him and tell him to make a photocopy for you this week. And of course, I mean, and as I continue saying about what the things that I gave to your pastor is prayer for families, and I gave different pamphlets and things for you families have at home as resource for, right. for your children. Then, I don't know how much time I have left.
We've got about 4 minutes.
Oh, my goodness.
We've got a lot of events coming up.
Yes.
We need people to at least circle the date.
Yeah, please, you yeah. do it, because you speak better than me.
Oh, no. This, of course, is National Vocation Awareness Week, November 3 to 9. World Day of Consecrated Life, February 2nd. World Day of Prayer for Vocation, so important, May the 3rd. And then the events here in the diocese, Parish Vocation, the Vocations Dinner, which is just a wonderful event. It moves around from parish to parish. Let's see, we had it at in Vacaville last year,
uh-huh.
last summer. St. Joseph's.
Correct.
Very, very wonderful event. We've had it in Placerville. We've had it at St. Basil's in Vallejo. It's been all over. It's been at St. Clair. It's been at Our Lady of Grace in West Sacramento in the gym there. And I can't remember all of them, but it's been all over.
Very
and this
good.
Year will be at St. Mary's. And good. Just circle the date, June the 20th. And the Knights of Columbus are so good about providing
wonderful
food.
Wonderful, man.
And
their wives, of course.
Yes, yes. And the event itself is just, you get to meet all the seminarians.
Yeah.
And it's just a lot of fun, too.
It is, indeed.
It's a lot of fun. And Bishop Soto always comes and inspires the crowd. And,
yes.
It's wonderful stuff. The annual basketball game, the Sacramento Classic basketball game with priests and the seminarians, will be May the 19th at Christian Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
That's always, I think this is the fourth or fifth annual. And it's always a great game, always a lot of fun. And so you get to play basketball if you're a priest, okay? And you get to play soccer. Soccer, not yet, but just basketball for now. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Quo Vadis, where are you going? The retreat for boys will be July 30 to August 2nd up at Trinity Pines in Colfax. And so many more. Father, why don't you tell people if they, whether it's a young man or a young woman, or the parents want a little more information, should they contact their parish priest? Should they contact you?
They can contact their priest, you know, at the parish, because they are the first vocational directors of their flock, you know, about information, about resources. But still, I'm open. Anytime a parent wants to approach me about their children and about questions that they have, I'm available. My telephone number is 916-733-0258. H. And my Gmail, I'm sorry, my email account is ghernandez@scd.org. Anyway, you didn't get what I'm saying, just go to the website of the Diocese of Sacramento or go to Consider Priesthood on Facebook and Consider Priesthood on Instagram, and you will find me there.
Very, very good. Father, always a pleasure.
Thank you, Bob.
You're an inspiration to all of us. You really
thank
are.
You. Thank you. Give me your prayers, please, and keep in your prayers the seminarians and the inquirers.
Our prayers for you are guaranteed.
Thank you so much, everybody. God bless you all.
Thanks, Father. God bless you, too. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Ministry of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts has been for all of us here in the diocese as they transition into new ownership and management. They continue to offer wonderful workshops, wonderful resources for the Catholic community throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. They're located at 6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Give them a call, 916-338-7272. We also receive a generous underwriting support by Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. If you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help you with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to get you where you want to go. You can contact them, get all the details at Crumley & Associates, 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks. They're at 916-638-4600. That's 916-638-4600. And we are certainly appreciative of the fine and long-standing support of the Mercy Foundation, of Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts, and of Crumley and Associates.
Thank you.